You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award winning boutique wealth manager. The topic this week is as follows. Are your beneficiaries up to date? And telling us if they are and what the implications of them not being is Mags Haystack from Brenthurst Wealth. It says here, Mags, many investors might not be aware, but their current retirement investments might not be set up correctly when it comes to beneficiaries. Now, as I said before we went on air, this is something that I'm not familiar with, so I'm probably going to ask simple questions, but the simple questions are very often the most impactful. Why is it so important to have beneficiaries in place and up to date?
Well, Lindsay, as always, thanks so much for the chat. And it's something that, you know, I was just thinking off the top of my head. And what's quite interesting is a lot of the conversations that we have, many of the other advisors when doing the podcast, a lot of it stems from practical examples that happens to us in our, let's say, day-to-day dealings with investors and what happens to investors' money after they pass away. And it's a topic I honestly think doesn't get brought up enough, especially with, let's say, people who are, let's say, in their golden years and they've got policies or retirement annuities and everything else that they structured 30, 40 years ago and they've basically forgotten about. And it's so important because when you look at all the different types of investments and where you have the option to nominate beneficiaries, so not all investments have that option. There's certain, let's say, more popular investments. We're not talking about life policies for, you know, the sake of the argument, but a lot of the times the beneficiaries are A, not nominated, or B, there are beneficiaries nominated who might not be in the, let's say, in the person's life anymore, maybe from divorce, or, you know, they've nominated parents who have passed away. And it's so important to ensure that your beneficiaries are up to date because it will impact ultimately your estate and what happens to the loved ones once you are no longer around. And I think we're going to dive straight into those examples. And you also mentioned to me you also have questions, and I think it's a great way to kind of talk about it, you know, on a very organic manner.
Let me get organic now. And just before you get into the individual examples, just before that, indulge me, please. Incorrect nomination could have avoidable consequences. How can a nomination be incorrect? Under what circumstances?
So it's a very good example. So that is specifically for, let's say, let's start with retirement annuities. Now, you are able to nominate anyone that you so choose. So I think maybe if, you know, my wording was a little bit unclear, but for example, you have a retirement annuity and you nominate your best friend, Bob, who you've known your entire life. But in the meantime, you actually have dependents. So for some investors, that might be children, it could be a wife, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where, with retirement annuities specifically, the trustees come in and they will actually have the final say into how your capital gets distributed. So I hope that makes sense. So that could be an example of an incorrect beneficiary.
That's interesting, though, because, again, I don't want to labour this point because you've got so much to get through. But if Bob has been a lifelong friend and he's helped you out of sticky situations, etc., surely he deserves something. And the trustees are therefore sitting there and saying, no, actually, wife and children should get his 15% or whatever it is, and that's the end of the argument. But this maybe will come up during some of the examples. Now, you're going to go through these individually. And the first example is endowments. And your first sentence is as follows. You can nominate beneficiaries for both local and offshore endowments. Now, what is the benefit of nominated beneficiaries in endowments specifically?
So an endowment essentially is a tax. I don't use the word efficient because it's not necessarily the case for everyone, but it does provide a tax benefit in terms of, let's say, your capital gains tax, your interest as a majority of what it provides. Now, from an estate planning point of view, an endowment is a very useful tool, in my opinion, because it provides a very quick distribution of capital. So if you have, let's say, money in your bank account and you pass away, that capital normally only gets distributed once your estate has been wound up. Now, that's not the case with endowments. Now, an endowment, should you pass away, you have beneficiaries nominated, that capital gets distributed quite quickly. Furthermore, the executors component with regards to an endowment. So an endowment, don't get me wrong, it still forms fully part of your estate. Your estate will still pay tax on it, but there are no executor's fees on endowments, simply because of the structure is completely different from what we would refer to as a discretionary investment. If you don't have beneficiaries nominated on an endowment, it will default back to the estate. And that is the case for all of these investments that we're going to talk about. It's all about ensuring that the default doesn't go to the estate. It's ensuring that your beneficiaries are structured correctly to ensure the maximum benefit from an estate planning point of view. So to answer your question, you actually want to make sure that you have beneficiaries nominated on endowments because they will get quick access to capital once you pass away and then add a benefit of paying less in executor's fees.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Now we move on from endowments to retirement annuities. And you say the following: you can have nominated beneficiaries, but retirement investments follow a different structure when it comes to distribution of assets. So when you say different, you mean different to endowments?
Yes. So piggybacking off of that example that we used with Bob earlier. Now, for example, we have an investor, married, two children. The ultimate or final say in how the capital gets distributed falls on the trustees of that particular, let's say, retirement investment. In most cases, it's, you know, defaulted to, you know, pension fund administrators, but in this case, it's the trustees. Now, they follow one of the acts in the Pension Fund Act, which is Section 37C, and that deals specifically with dependents. So going back to that example with Bob, you've said, listen, Bob, you're my best friend. You mean more to me than anything else. I'm leaving 100% of my retirement savings to you. The trustees will then come in and they will firstly identify, okay, do you have dependents? Do you have people who are financially dependent on you? Okay, yes, you have a wife, you have children. They've financially relied on you during your life. Now that you've passed away, is it going to put them in a, you know, in a worse off position by not providing them with capital? And then they would essentially then say, okay, sorry, Bob, he has given you 100%, but, you know, we're going to drop it to, you know, whatever amount. It's on a case-by-case basis. There is no definitive answer of how they would essentially distribute that capital. In most cases, you know, it doesn't look good for Bob. You know, that money would go to the family. So that's a very important concept as well. And again, if you don't have any beneficiaries nominated, the trustees could still look for it. But if there are no beneficiaries nominated, let's say, for example, you don't have any family, you don't have a wife, you don't have children, then ultimately it will, you know, go back into your estate, and that's something that you want to avoid. That doesn't happen too often, but it can happen. And it's, again, it's about just ensuring that you are not putting your estate in a worse off position from a tax point of view and estate duty point of view as well, essentially. And essentially what happens is if your beneficiaries are nominated correctly, you can also nominate alternative beneficiaries as well. Now, an alternative beneficiary just means that should your nominated beneficiaries no longer be alive, or basically that's what it means, then there is an alternative beneficiary that it defaults to. But essentially, should you pass away, your pension fund, you've nominated your beneficiaries correctly, they then have the option of how to manage the capital. And again, that forms part, that capital is then paid outside of the estate. And again, further reducing your estate duty. So I think the general message is quite clear now. Having correct beneficiaries structured in different types of investments ultimately translates into a lower estate duty implication.
Okay, let's say this, 100% goes to your best friend, and that seems inappropriate given the fact that the person who has just been deceased has a wife and children, in other words, family dependents. But what if the situation occurred whereby your best friend had got you out of a sticky situation in the past, i.e., for example, lent you money, and that debt hasn't been fully repaid? And by giving him 100%, then that would eradicate that debt and also not burden the dependents with the debt, because the debt would still be ongoing. That might be something that the trustees could look at, I suppose. Or they could say, okay, we understand why you're giving this chap some money, but we'll reduce it to, say, I don't know, 40%, something like that. Could that be a scenario?
So not necessarily, because, sorry, I always confuse these two, but if you owe someone money, I think that is a debtor, your pension fund is protected from them. So they cannot actually have a, let's say, a debt claim against a pension fund. If you know, that forms part of a separate component, which is not really the basis of the beneficiary topic for today. But in that case, the executor would have to essentially advertise the death. And then if you owe anyone capital, then they can come forward. So that is a separate issue, though the pension fund is actually protected in that case. And again, they will look at dependents. It's not necessarily about who you owe money. I don't think it goes, you know, that far down the rabbit hole in those cases. I personally have not dealt with anything like that, but as far as I know, that you know, they you are protected, you know, specifically for that.
Yeah, I think what I was trying to say really is that there are certain extenuating circumstances that might mean that the trustees say, okay, on the surface, this looks unfair, but on the other hand, these circumstances that have suddenly come to light about your relationship with your best friend means that something else might happen. I just wondered how flexible the trustees and the law was, Mags. I think that was the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, I'm not 100% certain. As far as I understand, the family will always default. They would essentially get the capital. Okay. Because of these cases. I mean, just to maybe, you know, go a little bit taboo on the subject, but for example, maybe Bob, it was not a Bob, it was a Mary. It was, you know, the husband's really good female friend, if you know what I mean, and he's giving her all of the money. Same situation. It would default back to the family, if you catch my drift.
I do catch your drift. Yes, very well indeed. Living annuities now. You say it's crucial for investors to nominate beneficiaries in living annuities. In particular, investors can nominate alternate beneficiaries. And what happens if investors don't appoint beneficiaries for the living annuity?
So very similar to what we mentioned with retirement annuities, living annuities are slightly different because they are not regulated in the same way as retirement annuities are with trustees and all of that. Now, with a living annuity, it's a lot more clear cut. If you don't have beneficiaries, it will go to your estate. That's it. There is no fact-finding mission of dependents or anything else like that. It will unfortunately go straight into the estate. And that is completely avoidable because living annuities, just like retirement annuities, do not form part of your estate. Now, as I mentioned to you on the phone earlier, just before this conversation, again, a lot of what we do is based on our personal experiences or maybe personal experiences of my colleagues, and we share information. But we have had a case recently where an investor had passed away with a living annuity and he had no nominated beneficiaries. And that also kind of stemmed the discussion for today, and just ensuring that investors make sure the beneficiaries are up to date. With living annuities, you can obviously also nominate percentages. So you can nominate, let's say, for example, your wife 50% and then your kids. Let's say you've got two children, they can each get 25%. So you have more flexibility in that case. But if you don't nominate beneficiaries and you have dependents, then unfortunately, there's not much that you can do about it. Same situation, you can nominate alternative beneficiaries as well, which just means if your original nominated beneficiaries are no longer with us, then it goes to your backup beneficiaries essentially. And it just provides your beneficiaries the flexibility of essentially having access to the capital. So they, just as a quick, you know, aside, you know, they have the option of continuing your current annuity payment or they can withdraw the money in cash. That option is completely up to them. But if you don't have a beneficiary, and something else I just thought of, you're essentially paying double tax because it's now going back into the estate and then estate duty will be payable on that living annuity, and then once it's distributed, you could be left with significantly less. So it's in your best interest as an investor to ensure, if you have an endowment, if you've got a retirement annuity or pension fund, and especially a living annuity, make sure your beneficiaries are up to date. If something changes in your family, you know, maybe one of your beneficiaries are no longer with us, make sure that you take the correct and adequate steps to adjust that. And same with divorces. Yes, it happens. It's part of life. But if you divorce and your ex-spouse is still the beneficiary, just keep in mind that in most cases it will most likely default to them as well. So just ensure that you go through the exercise maybe once a year or every, you know, 2-3 years, just making sure, okay, I've checked my beneficiaries, they're up to date, I'm happy with it. And it's an admin exercise that takes all of 2 minutes.
Well, that was what I was going to say, actually. In summary, the message here is keep an eye on your beneficiaries, because your life and your family's life and your friends' lives are all living, breathing, changing, fluid organisms all the time. And from one year to the next, things do change. So you've got to sit down with your financial advisor and say, is it appropriate that this person is getting 25%, despite the fact that this person is my son and he's made an absolute fortune in his business, and maybe the money could be better used elsewhere with his younger brother who hasn't yet made his way in life, that sort of thing, Max.
Exactly. And probably the strongest argument is ensuring that SARS gets, you know, as little as possible.
Okay. Hopefully my vast SARS listenership is on holiday today, Max. But that's really good. That's very interesting because, as I said in the beginning, I know nothing about it. Max, thank you very much for your time. Max Haystack is from Brenthurst Wealth, and that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.